This podcast is brought to you by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, this is Tasman Report, a production of the Tasman District Council, and I'm John Bullock. This episode has a broad water theme. First up, we're going to be talking with Richard Kirby, Council's Group Manager for Three Waters. And Nelson Tasman remembered its members of the Merchant Marine with a commemoration service at the War Memorial in Anzac Park, Nelson, on Saturday, the 29th of August. There has been literally a stream of change in recent times with the RMA, Fast Track, Charter Schools, and broadly speaking, right across health, education and water, especially local water done well. So where are we in that process of change, and what does it mean for Tasman? For context, challenges and expectation, I spoke with Richard Kirby, Council's Group Manager for Three Waters.
Well, the legislation that the government passed soon after it was elected with coalition government required councils to either form a CCO with other councils, a council-controlled organisation, which is kind of a separate company, or form a separate company of its own, or continue to do it in-house with these existing staff and resources. All three of those options, there's statutory requirements that we have to meet. Commerce Commissioner involved as well from an economic and financial perspective to make sure that everything is ring-fenced and that the Three Waters are basically funding themselves and the money is being spent within Three Waters. So the council decided to do the internal business unit, and so that was in June last year, June 2025, and so now we're in the process of implementing that.
And I'd imagine that decision was taken to find the best fit for Tasman, what was going to be of the greatest benefit to our community?
At this stage, yes, I think Tasman District Council felt that it wanted to still retain control over the Three Waters on behalf of its community, and that was the key reason for that decision, yes.
Well, now that this plan has been approved, what does it mean to build an in-house business unit? You're doing it from scratch, so what are the biggest hurdles you faced as you head towards that July 2027? It's all got to go.
The biggest hurdle is uncertainty about what ring fencing actually is. At the moment, and from a financial perspective, our Three Waters are in separate accounts now, so in that respect, it's ring fenced. The key issue comes in with staff within the organisation. At the moment, the staff within Three Waters help other parts of the organisation and vice versa. So now we're going to have to try and somehow manage that relationship, and we're probably going to have, rather than us, the internal business unit, hiring its own people in wellbeing, finance, strategic planners and the like, we're probably going to have service level agreements with the rest of the organisation to provide those services. So the rest of the organisation almost going to become service providers to the internal business unit, and in that they will then have the costs clearly identified so that we know what's being spent and what value is being achieved.
And I imagine also, I mean, just given where we are with the skill set of New Zealand, you know, like people who have the experience, that must come to be a bit of a play in it.
Yes, so we're utilising a whole lot of resources from externally to help us out. We've got seven work streams that we're working on establishing the business unit, and there's 260 odd tasks that have to be done. Now those tasks, some will be done by staff, but some would have to bring in resources to help set up, and their tasks are setting up so that we comply with the legislation.
You touched on before the need to ring fence.
Yeah.
How does that work in practice, you know, with the flow of money that will be around?
Well, the flow of money, the money that we get from either from the council and through rates at the moment, there's a rate charge for water, wastewater and stormwater. Then there's a volumetric charge for those on the water supplies. So that money will be ring fenced to be spent on those three activities. So the revenue from water will be spent in water. The revenue from wastewater will be spent in wastewater. The revenue from stormwater will be spent on stormwater.
Because Tasman is such a diverse place, you've got booming coastal towns, you've got, you know, quieter, smaller communities. How do you sort of kind of get a balance here? How does all that work?
Well, the council is, up until now, most of those supplies are ring-fenced. The only ones that in the water supply, the only ones that aren't, have their own separate accounts.
Yeah.
We have what we call a water club, which is basically those schemes that provide largely urban water supply. So what we do is, whether you live in Takaka, whether you live in Murchison, or whether you live in Richmond or Wakefield or Brightwater, you pay the same price. Motawake is not part of the club, and then one or two others are not part of the club either. So, but the council is pretty keen to actually unify the whole water activity across the district. The wastewater activity is largely unified now, and then the stormwater one is largely unified now. So they're pretty keen on the water one to be unified. So if money has to be spent in a small town out the back, a lot of money that they can't afford on their own, the rest of us would all be paying for it. So it's almost like being part of a community.
That was Richard Kirby, Council's Group Manager for Three Waters, and you're listening to Tasman Report. On display in the Richmond Library from September 7, the legends of Mohua Aereere, the story of our ports and coastal shipping from the mid-1800s through to the mid-1900s. What becomes evident in this story are the benefits felt both locally, regionally and nationally from shared planning, ambition and service to community. And that was echoed Saturday 29 August at the War Memorial in Anzac Park, Nelson, where seafarers, family and community from across the region gathered to honour the women and men of the Merchant Marine. And this is a recording of the commemoration address given by Commander Peter Cousins, Royal New Zealand Navy retired.
Ahoy there. Yeah, yeah. The theme for this year's Merchant Navy Day service is to highlight and consider the hazards faced by merchant seafarers in their ships anywhere on the world's oceans and the effect it has on us here in New Zealand. It's true, many seafarers face real and immediate danger. Looking across the horizon of world affairs, there's evidence of irrevocable change from a fair degree of certainty of the past to one of a future which is fragmented and fractured. We are entering a new epoch where we will need more than ever to look after our own ourselves. At the height of the ongoing conflict early this year between Israel, the USA, and Iran, there were some 500 commercial ships with as many as 20,000 seafarers trapped in the Persian Gulf. Imagine, if you will, what it was like to be on a defenseless ship with missile exchanges overhead between the protagonists and not knowing if your ship would become a casualty. And what are the families of these sailor folk? In their homes, thousands of miles away, and their natural anxieties. The indifference of many of the world leaders to this situation is simply appalling. The International Maritime Organization say some 11,000 sailor folk managed to exit those waters, but hundreds of ships with about 6,000 sailors remain there as their ships swing of anchor with extremely uncertain futures and with unscrupulous owners unwilling to victual or indeed pay them. Seafarers therefore face other hazards of outrageous behaviour. The point of highlighting these matters for your attention is that disrupted shipping routes create uncertainties in the form of negative and serious economic and social consequences. For ships and sailors alike, there will be longer time at sea, more strain on crews, and yes, significantly increased shipping costs. Shipping lanes are elastic to a degree, but there comes a point when the elasticity fails and snaps. What would become of New Zealand if shipping services to and from this country were severely reduced or failed altogether? This thin blue line of foreign seafaring folk who bring their ships to and from New Zealand is indeed the Achilles heel or the Achilles tendon of our security, our prosperity, and national happiness. We care about these folk as they visit New Zealand, and especially here in Nelson. How is our mission to seafarers coping? Has it got enough resources? We cannot escape the iron logic that New Zealand's well-being depends on trade and global shipping. Extended shipping lanes, less ships and seafarers, plus enormous uncertainties of regular services mean extra costs to New Zealanders, importers and exporters. I bring this home to you because just 1 week ago in the Nelson Mail, the headline said, "Ferry delays cost millions." It refers to services across Cook Strait. Imagine that same logic applied to all the shipping services to and from this country, and how big would the bill become? Many tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars annually. In any case, the cost consumers, the cost services provided by Goran Fintreff are already exorbitant and often irregular. Why then do we rely on foreign owns and cruise ships? In 1870, a group of South Canterbury farmers formed the New Zealand Shipping Company to resist monopolistic practices by foreign interests. They wanted local control of their shipping. The company had an enviable reputation for excellence and cost-effectiveness, and traded primarily between here and the United Kingdom for 100 years. Likewise, the Union Steamship Company of New Zealand had routes that extended from here throughout the Pacific and to the west coast of the USA and Canada, and its principal port on the west coast, Vancouver. Other lines reached from here to Australia, Southeast Asia, and beyond to Calcutta. It was at one time the largest shipping company in the Southern Hemisphere. Today, there are no New Zealand flagged, owned, crewed, and operated ships to bring cargoes to and from these shores. We depend on the whims of foreign shipping companies and pay what they charge. If we can own and operate a national airline, Air New Zealand, that is consistently admired as one of the best in the world, why then can we not do the same with a national shipping company? Such a company would provide resilience, capacity, and significant financial opportunities. Shipping companies make money, lots of it. Repealing the cabotage laws, and in particular, Section 198 of the Maritime Transport Act 1994, would permit New Zealand operated ships to compete on a level basis with foreign ships on our own coast. The Blue Highway of the seas is essentially free. Unlike the costs to build four-lane motorways that cost $45 million and upwards per kilometre, it takes a lot of so-called road user charges to pay that back. There may have been a need for the law in 1994. It was somewhat petulant, but there's no need for it today. In addition to coastal, trans-Tasman and shipping services to the Pacific Islands, a complementary regular deep sea service of a small flotilla of merchant ships specifically designed for the conveyance of our unique trade from New Zealand to the hub ports of the Indo-Pacific and back again with products from our free trade and ASEAN partners would surely remove some of the unproductive handicaps in our economy.
You're listening to Tasman Report and a recording of the commemoration address at this year's Merchant Navy Day, given by Commander Peter Cousins, Royal New Zealand Navy retired.
The foregoing suggests that New Zealand should rebuild its maritime ambition and identity. Where better place to start than here, in this maritime city of Nelson? We have the expertise and the energy of the maritime industrial base, and significant potential to maintain coastal and naval ships too. Extending the frontiers of nautical scientific knowledge is the Cawthron Institute, which is a national treasure and admired throughout the marine and aquatic world for its groundbreaking research and expertise. And with their modern technological assets and practical seagoing attributes, the NMIT educates and trains seafarers. And whilst we're at it, what about some maritime music that has a distinctly Kiwi idiom from the brilliant Adam School of Music? Now there's a challenge. And I also see here today the Sea Cadets from Tamaha and the Navy Cadets from training ship Talisman. You are actually the youngsters who we will encourage to be the seafarers of tomorrow. And I know already that there are amongst the Sea Cadets here and the Sea Scouts people who know how to tie and know the difference between a reef knot and a granny knot. How many others are there of you here who can tell the difference? I spoke to one this morning. I can see that he is going to be a brilliant captain of a ship one day, maybe even an admiral, or the chairman of a New Zealand shipping company. All of these notions fall under the rubric of sea power, a strategic concept, not, as a cynic might observe, to prepare for the last war, but rather a series of logical principles to increase our security, our maritime security, that is, and help prevent armed conflicts from breaking out in the future. At its heart is merchant shipping and a navy to protect it. There are many benefits that accrue. Those benefits include a much required increase in our national and regional security, significant national wealth generations, technical advancements, and the development of learning and information exchanges, improved environmental security of the ocean, and thus a huge contribution to our national happiness. Underpinning sea power as a bedrock to national maritime enterprise is the nurturing of our maritime heritage and culture. Here in Nelson, there is the Anchor Shipping Company's office, which is languishing like an abandoned ship at anchor in the Persian Gulf today. If we are serious about our maritime ambitions, this wonderful edifice and important relic of national maritime endeavor and prosperity requires a refit and civic support to equip it as a center for promoting our rich nautical heritage and much more besides. It could provide a venue for research about our often neglected maritime and nautical culture, and from Maori, European, and the recent arrivals for the study and practical application of our strategic maritime ambitions. On this Merchant Navy Day, our nautical and maritime reflections ought to include a seaman-like appreciation of our circumstances. And yes, an ambitious intention to become a great maritime once again. Of course we can do it. It is there for the taking. Why not? It will unite us all together and make us strong, resilient, as our forebears intended. We salute all those merchant seafarers at sea today and thank them for their courage and tenacity in keeping open the arteries of trade. We owe them far, far more than what they are paid. We give thanks for the legacy bestowed on us by those men and women who went to sea under conditions of great peril, and whose distinguished service and memory we honour today.
And that was Commander Peter Cousins, Royal New Zealand Navy retired, giving the commemoration address at Merchant Navy Day in Nelson this year, August the 29th. And to all our Merchant Navy crew members, we thank you for your service. And that's it for Tasman Report. This is a production of the Tasman District Council. I'm John Bullock. Mati wā.
This podcast was brought to you by Fresh FM, with assistance from New Zealand On Air. Other great local podcasts are available through our website, freshfm.co.nz.